Kia ora, James Crute.
Kia ora, Catherine. How are you?
Good, thanks. There's been so much build-up, so much anticipation around the Beatles doco Get Back, which is on Disney, so...
Wow. Yeah, look, I think if you're a Beatles fan or even if you're not, this is kind of the intimate look at the last, well, kind of the last days of the band that you didn't know you needed. Look, it's 6 minutes shorter than the Hobbit trilogy, so you're in for near 8 hours of Beatles if you can handle it. It's split into three parts. People could watch it night by night last week, but now you can binge it all together. Look, what's more interesting than the fact that Jackson's managed to create almost 8 hours out of this amazing amount of footage that there was that back in the day, somebody made a 90-minute film out of it. In fact, probably less. It seems remarkable that somebody managed to cut it down to that much. Jackson's also talked about having a 17 or 18 hour cut. So the idea behind this was when the Beatles were making their album in 1970, they were also, or 1969, 1970, they were also looking at having a TV special. And so they decided they had some space in the Twickenham studios. They had 3 weeks to sort of put this all together because Ringo was needed for a movie, The Magic Christian with Peter Sellers, in the same sort of location 3 weeks later. So they had a deadline. They basically had no songs, so they were trying to put it together on the hoof. And it just all spectacularly fell apart. And what the documentary that they ended up creating instead of a TV special sort of really didn't capture a lot of the tensions that went on. And this kind of lifts the lid on, you know, what was really going on. You sort of get a sense of the forces that were kind of ended up splitting the band apart. And George Harrison clearly being unhappy with particularly Paul McCartney's leadership of the band. Yeah, look, I just think it's an interesting look at how band dynamics work and also how the Beatles worked in terms of their ability to create songs out of nothing, but also the kind of, you know, that sometimes they had between them.
Yeah, but it's slain some myths, according to Sir Peter Jackson, including, you know, the idea that they were sort of at the war at the end, and also that Yoko Ono was sort of a driving force in their breakup. Did you feel like it?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, and in fact, I think it's almost pointedly that Peter Jackson opens with a scene with one of the sort of Hare Krishna hangers-on that George Harrison invited to the sessions. It's interesting. Yoko is what, you know, Linda Eastman, as she was then before she was Linda McCartney, is also there. And they're really a benign presence. They're there all the time, but they're very much in the background. In fact, one of the most interesting things is not audio that you can hear, but a sort of animated conversation that's clearly taking place between Linda Eastman and Yoko Ono. And they look to be having a grand old time in the background. I think Jackson's right in that sense. Also, I think some of the more interesting things are where the band look like they're having fun. It was just the pressure to perform. I mean, they'd already walked away from live touring and things like that because that had become too much. They were just all going in their different directions. And I think having spent some time away to try and come back, it was just a bridge too far. And you have this amazing guy who was the director of this whole project, a guy called Michael Lindsay Hogg, who was determined, and you keep seeing it, that rather than the rooftop concert they had in the end, he wanted them to perform in like a crumbling kind of coliseum in Libya. And he keeps on going back to this idea. And you can see particularly Harrison just thinking that this is the worst idea in the world. The last thing he wants to do is to go to the other end of the earth, so to speak, and sort of perform in this sort of weird location that just doesn't feel like where the Beatles are at. It's just fascinating to see that tension.
Brilliant. The Beatles Get Back's on Disney. Now we've got three more to get through, so do them in order of priority. Do you want to start with Dune, which is in cinemas?
Yeah, look, Auckland's going back to the cinemas from what I think it's 12:07 a.m. tonight. Dune is definitely one of the movies you should check out on the biggest screen you can find. I think finally somebody has managed to capture Frank Herbert's nutso sort of 1960s space opera and actually turn it into something that feels like, as my colleague Graham Tuckett called it, a propulsive film that goes forward. It's got an all-star cast, everyone from Josh Brolin to Rebecca Ferguson, Timothy Chalamet, Oscar Isaac. You know, it's just Charlotte Rampling's even in there, and it just feels spectacular and big screen and almost Lawrence of Arabia, but as a sci-fi. You do have to realize it's only part of the novel, and I think that's part of this movie's charm, is it is part one of two parts, so you have to realize you're going to have to come back in a couple of years. But if you want something immersive, if it's particularly in your Auckland, if you're heading back to the cinema, that is the one to check out.
Excellent. What about The Rescue, which is in cinemas and on Disney?
That's right, in cinemas and coming to Disney later this month. They've delayed it a few weeks so our cinemas can get a bit more of it. This is a documentary about the real life incident that gripped the world a couple of years ago, the Thai football team, the Wild Boars, and their assistant coach who were caught in a rainstorm and became trapped in caves. And of course, the world held its breath for quite some time. You know, I think we all thought they were dead for some time, but this sort of miraculous thing happened. And this tells the story from the perspective of the sort of amateur British cavers who sort of defied everybody's expectations. You know, the military weren't getting anywhere, the Navy SEALs weren't getting anywhere, international rescue teams were struggling. And these guys who sort of knew, not necessarily that terrain, but knew the type of terrain they were getting into and what it might need to get them out of there. This is sort of their touching the void-esque recounting of the amazing rescue that they managed to put together. Yes, there are some reconstructed scenes, which people, you know, either love or hate, that whole idea of, you know, dramatizing when you're watching what's supposed to be a documentary. But I think it's done in such a way that it doesn't sort of interfere with the integrity of the overall story. And these guys are just sort of ordinary blokes. And some of them have some pretty weird quirks. One of them particularly had spent his entire life avoiding children, only to be thrust into this situation where he had to rescue and get, I guess, quite intimate with these kids in order to rescue them. I mean, you know, they also had to essentially knock them out by having, yes, one of the team was an Australian anaesthetist in order to get them through. I mean, you know, and they knew that if things went wrong, the Thai judicial system would be like on them. You know, they even had a James Bond style espionage attempt to escape if things did go pear-shaped.
Wonderful, wonderful story. Yeah. Okay, and to finish, The Unforgivable in cinemas and coming to or on Netflix?
Coming to Netflix next week, but still in cinemas. If you're a fan of Sandra Bullock, you should definitely check this out. Like Widows a couple of years ago, it's another film that the Americans have imagined from a UK miniseries. This one starred Saran Jones from Dr. Foster. It's about a decade old, and it's all about a woman who has been incarcerated for 20 years. She's finding that coming back out into the community is a real struggle. She thinks it's just because she's an ex-con, but actually it's because she killed a cop, and so nobody will have, a barge pole of her. Then there are the cop's family are also out to get her, and she's also trying to reconnect with her baby sister, who she lost contact with, was only 5 when this happened, and it's sort of trying to navigate that and seeing if she can reconnect just to check that she's okay while everybody else is sort of, you know, trying to keep her away from her. Look, Bullock really has reinvented herself as a dramatic actress, and this is well worth checking out.
James, thanks so much. Brilliant. The Unforgivable is in cinemas, coming to Netflix soon.